Hello and welcome to the front page for a look back on the greatest week of the year, the Cheltenham Festival. It was a week all about one man, Willie Mullins. But there's plenty of other talking points, some top class competition and a bit of a nightmare in the car park. All this to be discussed on today's show. And joining me in the studio is Paul Keighley. 3 days at the Cheltenham Festival this week. Paul, before we get stuck into the main topics, how was the Keighley portfolio this week? Did you have a good week?
I just about got through it, is the best way to say it. Tuesday was bad. Wednesday had some near misses. Thursday was very good. And Friday was so-so. I haven't pulled up any trees, but I haven't knocked that many down either.
We'll take that when we're doing
exactly,
the week,
yeah. Absolutely.
And over in Ireland, he's been over for the 4 days of the Cheltenham Festival, and I know he had a good Cheltenham Festival, David Jennings. Have you recovered after the week?
I personally have recovered. My voice hasn't quite got back to 100% just yet. It's about 75-80%. So what's the best thing to do when your voice isn't working? Go on a show and talk some more.
Well, to be fair, DJ, I saw you were even giving it the big one from the very last one of the day. I could see you down in the parade ring celebrating it. You enjoyed that one particularly, didn't you? You were different side to you, I saw there, DJ.
Yeah, that was sweet. It's always nice to back the last winner. And I kind of put my neck on the line in our Good Morning show and kind of said that he was the banker of the final day and made a case that I thought was fairly compelling. And these things never really happen the way you think they will happen. And it was just a nice way to finish because, as Keels knows, you spend your lifetime in this game getting slagged. So when something actually comes off, it's actually pretty sweet.
Well, hopefully for you, DJ, there are brighter days ahead. And we will get stuck into day one and some of the big performances. And where else to start than the Champion Hurdle, a race which missed the superstar Constitution Hill, but we still got to see State Man and win fairly well. Paul, it wasn't the same brilliant Champion Hurdle we were hoping for between the two. He got the job done. He knuckled down. It's possibly fair to say he's just not quite his best at Cheltenham, is he? But he's
sort of better. It's one of those, isn't it? It's because it's possibly the worst run of his over hurdles for a year and a bit, isn't it? Because, yes, he got thumped by Constitution Hill last year, but he probably ran better in that Champion Hurdle than he did in this one because it didn't take much winning and he had to work hard enough to win it. You know, it's what was it? Echoes in Rain was third, was she? Lucia was third for Nicky Anderson. First mistake of the day. You won't be the last. my memory came on me, but I mean, Lucia's rated 143 or something. Mm. But going into it, so we're not talking standout performance. I think RPR said it was the lowest in the last 10 years. Which isn't a great surprise, really. But he got the job done, and you can only turn up and beat what's put in front of you. Problem, of course, is there could have been some others put in front of him.
And some interesting Racing Post ratings from the week. State Man got a rating of 160. Ballyburn, 168 in the Gallagher Novices Hurdle. And Lossiemouth, winner of the Mayor's Hurdle, got 163 or 156. If she was to get the £7 allowance, would be up to 163. So it suggests that for all State Man was the Champion Hurdler, perhaps there is better around. DJ, those three names there, I mean, Ballyburn was seriously impressive, wasn't he? What do you make of that Champion Hurdle picture? And also, if we're looking ahead to next year, is Constitution Hill straight home and hosed if he turns up?
Did Ballyburn get 168? Yeah, wow.
Correct, yeah.
I didn't realise that.
Just to put it into context, DJ, it is still lower than Constitution Hill Supreme. That got 174, but still a monster performance, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a little bit different to Keels here with State Man. He was, I suppose, a little bit underwhelming, but I think it was, if ever there was a Champion Hurdle, that was a total and utter two-horse race. This was it. You had Irish Point and you had State Man. Realistically, given the form of the Henderson horses, Iberico Lord couldn't win. So I think Paul Townend specifically rode the race to beat one horse. And at all stages, he seemed to have Irish Point covered. And I think everything went absolutely beautifully for Irish Point. He can't jump any better. He can't travel any better. Jack kicked on at the right time. Irish Point literally could not have done any more. And State Man was still nicely on top of him at the line. Yeah, it wasn't blown away. It wasn't amazing, but it was State Man doing what State Man does. He wins races and he won another race, and now he's won 9 Grade 1s. Would he have beaten Lossiemouth if Lossiemouth was in there getting the £7? Possibly not, but I think he'd up his performance again if there was another horse to beat. I think Paul would ride the race differently, and maybe he'd ride him more forcefully and maybe stretch him out coming down the hill, that kind of thing. I think on this occasion he just rode Statesman to beat Irish Point. So I don't think it's just a simple case of saying, oh, if Lossie Mouth was in there, Lossie Mouth would have won, because I think we would have seen a different Statesman if Lossie Mouth was in there, because I think Paul would have stuck with Statesman and somebody else would have rode Lossie Mouth. But it was certainly, visually, it was a little bit underwhelming, but I think there was a bit more substance to it than many people think. As regards Ballyburn, sure, look, he's just terrific. I said before the festival, he was the one horse that no person anywhere was against. I couldn't find anybody, even the people who, you know, find these 100-to-1 outsiders and try and put them up in races, couldn't find anybody to go against Ballyburn. He is just an exceptional racehorse. It's going to be interesting to see what happens next year with him. Over hurdles, visually, you'd say he was probably the performance of the week, but I wouldn't be just as against Statesman as most people are. He won a champion hurdle, as Willie Mullen said, he had to turn up to win it. He had only one horse to beat, and he beat that horse convincingly.
Yeah, no, I think you make a really, really good point in terms of Statesman there. It's different races, isn't it, and different performances. Paul, Ballyburn was Hurdle's performance of the week, says DJ. Would you be in agreement? It was pretty special.
Yeah, he looked very, very special horse, and it will be interesting to see what they decide to do with him. And I gather Willie Mullins has said he's one of those that could win a champion hurdle and a gold cup. I mean, you know, I'm surprised we haven't heard stupid prices from bookmakers for that, because it should be, you know, well over 100-to-1, obviously, not because of... Ballyburn doesn't have the potential, just because of how difficult it is. Because, you know, he'd have to win a champion hurdle next year, go through a novice chaser campaign, have again no injuries whatsoever, then go against the fully established chasers. We're talking 3 years hence. Mm-hmm. He's an exceptional horse who stays very well despite being keen, and obviously if he learns to settle, he's going to get even further. But he's also got loads of speed. It's a case of, is he just by miles the best in an average year, or is he by miles the best in a good year? Now, we're not going to know that for certain. I suspect it's probably the former, but yep, that doesn't mean he isn't a superstar in the making. There was nothing to touch him. He'd have won the Albert Bartlett as well, I think. Even if he didn't stay and race too keen, he was just a different league, and he's definitely a horse to look out for. And somebody said on Twitter earlier on that we've got another 360 days before we find out which race he runs in at the Cheltenham Festival. and that's going to be it, isn't it? Mm. Because he's going to have all options. If he does stay over hurdles, there'll be one, obviously. But if he goes over fences, there'll be one, two, three. So we'll just have to wait to see what the decision is made with him. But obviously, we'll talk about him doing champion hurdle gold cup. We're still going to have a Statesman. We're still going to have a Constitution Hill, hopefully. We're going to have a Lossie Mouth. And Lossie Mouth is obviously, you know, I thought she got away with it, to be honest.
Yeah.
She obviously stayed 2.5 mile, but she'd have won the race 15 lengths at 2 miles very, very easily. And she was having to be pushed out at the end. I think she's a bang 2-miler, and she ought to be going for the champion hurdle next year. Let's hope she does.
Yeah, I'd love to say that I've got control over how everything's gone, but we've gone quite heavy in on the hurdlers. So we'll finish off with the Stayers hurdle. Tehupu looked a solid selection. Hit a lot of money for him on the day. The best horse in the race, isn't he? Pretty straightforward.
Yeah, it was the best horse in the race. Got his conditions, I think. I mean, I know Gordon Elliott says he's not ground dependent, but his form suggests otherwise. But, whatever the case, he handled it and the opposition better than anything else could. A big up to Florian Porter for coming back over hurdles and finishing in the frame. And another Stayers hurdle. He loves it there. I loved watching him go out there and jump those hurdles from
agreed.
The front. He was just a fantastic watch. He just loves the place. So and I had a few critics around him, which was quite nice. But Tiapu, from turning in, he was always going to win, and he did it well.
Yeah, I don't think Gavin Cromwell has a bad runner at Cheltenham, does he, this season? He's just on fire since October.
Yeah,
it's just
absolutely.
Been an incredible season for him.
He's been a fantastic trainer, obviously, and he's very good with the horses he sends over here, particularly at the festival.
Yeah, sure. Come on to the chases, and where else to start but the Gold Cup, Gallop and Deschamps. An impressive back-to-back winner in the centenary year. DJ, it was just bang on. It was perfect, really, wasn't it? It was a bit of trouble with a loose horse, but he still won and looked miles the best. It was a top-class performance in a year which needed it, I suppose.
Absolutely, and the only worrying moment for punters was the loose horse. I thought at all stages of the race, he seemed to have everything covered, and it was interesting speaking to Brian Atchison, who owns Jerry Kalama, afterwards, and he said, I couldn't really get excited because I was always, my eye was always drawn to Gallop and the Champs, and he was always going that little bit better than us. And knowing that the champion that he is, I never really thought that we were going to beat him. And then he said, I thought, which was a great point, he said, It was almost like that Turner's Novice Chase again from a couple of years ago when Bob Olinger was the recipient of all that fortune because Galloping the Champs came down at the last. And he said, I didn't want to win a Gold Cup that way. So coming down to the last, usually if you're on a horse in second, you're kind of going, oh, I hope the one in front makes a mistake. And I'm sure plenty of Jerry Kalam backers would have won the same. But he said, I didn't want to win a Gold Cup that way. And I actually thought he spoke really well because he said, it's an honour trying to beat Galloping the Champs every time you come to the races. I was in Down Royal last November for the Ladbrokes Champion Chase, and Jerry Kalam beat Envoy Allen in that. And Brian came out with the statement that Galloping the Champs is the best we've seen since Cawdor Star in early November. And at this stage, like, he'd been beaten by Fast or Slow in the Punchdown Gold Cup. We hadn't seen him this season yet. So I was kind of like, ah, that's a bit of a, you know, I don't know whether I agree with that statement yet. I think he's got plenty to prove, but I think his performance on Friday proved that he probably is, certainly over that staying distance. I'd have obviously Sprinter Sacra ahead of both of them at a shorter trip, but I just thought on Friday it was like he had evolved into the perfect chaser. He's easy to settle now. He's not as extravagant over his jumps, never looks like falling, never looks like making mistakes, doesn't need cover, just has evolved into the perfect racehorse. And he's obviously taken his racing really well, which is great for racing because we've seen with Albin Photo, it was Tremor on New Year's Day, Gold Cup. And you're going, oh God, I really wish he ran some more. But Galloping the Champs looked better in this year's Gold Cup, having ran three times before the race, than he did in last year's Gold Cup. So that can only be a good thing for racing, because next season, given that he's likely to go to Punchdown again this season, I would say next season's going to run five times again. So if you're getting the best horse in training to run five times every season, that is what we want. And it might just, you know, give other trainers a nudge and say, well, look at Galloping the Champs. He's the best horse in training, and he's running five times every year. So hopefully what Willie Mullins is doing with Galloping the Champs can give maybe other trainers a little eye-opener that these horses can actually run.
A little tease there from DJ, we like that. I was followed a bit of a Gold Cup tour before the Cheltenham Festival, and one of the interesting stories when the Gold Cup went to France and the part owner of Il Est Francais said, am I allowed to hold the Gold Cup? To which, you can't unless you're wearing gloves. And his response was, don't worry, I'll hold it next year. So it's going to be interesting next year because you've also got Factor Fire. What did you make of the performance of Galloping des Champs? And also, as the wider picture, I mean, he's becoming a real superstar.
Well,
he is
a real superstar. He's won two Gold Cups. He's a better horse than the last horse to win two Gold Cups by some margin, I think, than Albin Photo. I think he's a superb horse. My issue with him is he's got his ground every time. And one of these days, it's going to have that dried out and it'll be nearly good. And he doesn't half hit the ground hard. And that was the only thing that would worry me. I did a preview and I think David Russell said, if it's good ground, he's got no chance. Now, I wouldn't say he's got no chance, because, but by the same token, we've got to see him because he goes through that ground like few others, doesn't he? And he handles it so well, and he's such a top class horse on it. But yeah, he's a fantastic horse, and he's great. Like DJ said, I mean, I wrote a piece at the start of the season saying, for fear of missing Cheltenham, all these horses not running there. So it's great to see one go there. We have had the other side of the coin though, with T-Up, who only ran him once and then turning up. So, you know, it still happens. People decide that this horse needs this way, this horse needs that way. And more often than not, they decide it's the fewer runs option. But no, it's great to see him. It was fantastic. Other mentions in the Gold Cup, Jerry Colomb is a much better horse than I thought he was. I have to say that for sure. Korak Rambler, now fairly short price favourite for the Grand National. 4 weeks between Cheltenham and Aintree. He was legless at the line.
Legless.
He was absolutely
legless.
Knackered. And that would worry me. I mean, he'll have to have an iron constitution. It's not like winning a handicap at Cheltenham off a mark in the mid-140s and then going to the Grand National. He is running the highest class race at the festival, run his absolute heart out. And his stride was shortening so rapidly at the line, he was almost walking over it. So he really is going to have an iron constitution to come back and bounce back for the National.
Yeah.
I mean, wouldn't back him. That doesn't mean he won't win.
No, they say often that it takes a while for a horse to ever recover from a Gold Cup. Some never really do.
I don't buy into that. No? I mean, no. You can pick any race. I mean, let's take the Gallaghers. I mean, now, Ballyburn has won that. And people talk about it being a good guide to the champion hurdle. But in reality, if you look at all the results in the last, this century, it's more a case of what happened to that one.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
you know, because that happens to a lot of races at Cheltenham. So it's not just a Gold Cup, but they have had a hard race. And to come out and have another race this season, especially being asked to go 4.25 miles in what, given the weather we've had non-stop, which is probably going to be another bog, I wouldn't be looking for that one for a bet as well. But I mean, yeah, he's a tough old cookie anyway, and he might be able to do it. But obviously, much higher mark than last year, still well in based on that Gold Cup run one, but will he recover?
Okay, just before we move on, Factor File, impressive enough. I had my doubts about him staying. I don't know. There were some who did,
well,
some who
didn't.
Well,
I mean, it's funny.
Is he a challenger to gallop in the Champ next year?
He has to be, doesn't he? I mean, I did plenty of... I did a few previews in the week running up to it, and virtually every panellist said that he wouldn't stay. Now, I didn't actually have an opinion on that. I didn't even actually consider that he wouldn't. Mm. Like, you know what I mean? It hadn't crossed my mind, and it ended up getting into my head that he wouldn't, so I backed Stay Away Faye. He was ill and wouldn't have won anyway, given the way Factor File won. But yeah, he clearly stayed that distance. Will he get another 2 furlongs? I mean, you know, he did that without turning ahead, didn't he?
On the other track as well.
All I'm going to say is, because we've got so many novice chasers at the festival, it was a weak race. And, you know, he's going to reach a level of galloping de Champ, he's got well over a stone to find. Doesn't mean he won't find it, young horse.
And finally, before we move on to some of the other topics, El Fabiolo DJ, disappointment of the week. It's just a case of draw a line through that. I mean, he's back to Punchtown, you presume, and if he's, well, disappointed, but surely it's too early to rule him out of anything yet.
Yeah, he was disappointing. The writing was on the wall very, very early. You know, he got very low at the third, he was low at the fourth, and then obviously he was out of the race by the fifth. And it was funny watching the race when he made the mistake. He was only still about 5 lengths behind the last horse, and I was surprised Paul didn't continue. But it turns out it was a masterstroke, because I think he was particularly stiff in his back end. So he obviously felt that he wasn't right. Wednesday was a very strange day at the Cheltenham Festival. The first two races, Ballyburn won the first, Factor File won the second. A lot of punters would have done multiples. I have never known a Cheltenham Festival day so flat as the Wednesday. Crowd was way down. Everybody seemed to be in bad humour. It was really, really strange. It was like as if everybody had given up on the festival by the Wednesday. You know, we had all these Mullins Shaw prices, and then obviously El Fabiolo was beaten, and I was doing the report in the race, and I said it was a kind of just at the time where we thought everything was really predictable in jump racing, especially at Cheltenham when Willie Mullins is winning everything. It just was a timely reminder of the glorious unpredictability of jump racing. And he obviously was out of the race early. Like, Captain Guinness is a really good horse. He's not a fantastic horse, but he claimed his moment. The goals were widened when El Fabiolo exited the scene, and he converted his opportunity. He was there when he needed to be, and he got the job done. But I have to say, for me, we'll probably come on to this later, and it's something Keel's touched on there about, you know, Factor File not really having the opposition he might have had because of so many novice chases. For me, the turning point of the whole Cheltenham Festival was the Turners, a race that I'd love to get rid of. But that was the race that actually turned the Cheltenham Festival around, because for me, that was the best atmosphere in the grandstand for any race at the Cheltenham Festival. It was Ginny's Destiny at Grey Dawning, going at it, hammering tongs from the top of the hill the whole way home. And you just kind of say to yourself, imagine if both of those were in the Brown Advisory, taking on Factor File, going hard at it from a long way out. And that's what we're missing from the Cheltenham Festival. We're missing those horses that are running the Turners. They need to be back together against one another, Grey Dawning against Factor File, because then we would have had a real proper Brown Advisory this year. For me, though, I would say the turning point was the Turners. That was the atmosphere of the week for me.
Yeah, I think it leads us well on to the whole point of the experience, and whether there's lots of different issues that have been highlighted during the week, one of which is competitive, you mentioned, the other is the dominance, aka from Willie Mullins himself and Ireland, but also the experience which you've touched there on, DJ, and the atmosphere there. Attendances were down during the week, It was a total just under 230,000. That's down from 280,000 in 2022, which represents a 18% drop. So clearly there are lots of different reasons as to why. The cost is one of the main reasons. Competitiveness, the idea of race, is becoming predictable on paper. And as you mentioned on Wednesday, you had two odds on favourites go in early doors who seemed like they were clearly far and best. The concept of predicting winners was taken out a bit. The love of drama was taken out. And it's interesting you mentioned the El Fabiola, because I completely agree with you at that point. Nobody wants to see a really exciting horse and one that's deserves to be a champion fall out like that, but there was a sense of not everything can go to script. It's just, this just can't happen. It just doesn't work like this. You want those odds on shots to beat, and you want, as us three here, want those odds on shots to take on and get them beat. What's your takeaway from it? I mean, you vox popping with race goers as well. Is it just a case of it's too expensive, we don't go, or is there a multitude of factors?
Where do you start? What time will we finish that? How long do we have? Okay. Let's go first. Far too expensive. Absolutely far too expensive for proper. The thing that I hate is, especially in Ireland, I know Ireland are dominating at the moment, but there are so many proper National Hunt fans that I see in Fairy House and Punchestown and Thurles of a Thursday and Clonmel. They go racing all around Ireland, and we're pricing them out of the market in Cheltenham. The exact people that we want to go to Cheltenham cannot go. Okay, there's so many of them cannot go, because when you take in, first of all, like, it's okay, ticket prices, which are too expensive, club and closure tickets, far too expensive. I do think the time has probably come to kind of get rid of this Tattersalls club and closure nonsense. I think that day is kind of gone. I think it should be all in the one. I think we should have, if you get your Tattersalls tickets, you should be allowed to watch the race in, you know, prime position, you know, in the grandstand at the front or wherever. I think the time has come for that. I don't know logistically how it would be possible, and I don't know how much money that would take away from the occasion, and we obviously need more money pumped in, but I just, the whole club tats thing doesn't sit well with me. That would be number one.
I just come in onto that point. That's an interesting point raised, because one of the topics that I've had from racegoers is this idea of the atmosphere from the staff being not necessarily unwelcoming, but quite strict, in the sense of you can't stand there, you're not allowed to take your pint and watch the races. So that whole sort of mantra of the race course enforcing things on you is definitely something that's been racegoers have picked up on. So that would come under the same term.
Yeah,
so
it's definitely, and it's something funny. I don't think, I could be wrong here now, and I'm not entirely sure, but I think we've almost got rid of reserved enclosures in Ireland. I know at Leopardstown, I think it's gone. It used to be at Punchestown until very recently. It may still be there, but I think it's gone. Or certainly if there is a reserved enclosure area, it's a very small area. I think in Ireland, we've got rid of that notion of, you know, upper and slightly lower class tickets. And I think that's something we need to do at Cheltenham as well. That would be number one. Now, that's only ticket prices, okay? The thing that's killing people in Ireland is, if you go to Cheltenham, you have to stay somewhere. You can't just sleep on the side of the street. You have to stay somewhere. And accommodation prices. If you just, you've done so many stories in this, James, and you've been leading the way with the stories on it. Accommodation is just so expensive. It's fine for me. You know, we're staying in a Racing Post house. I don't even have to think of accommodation. But for people that have to book accommodation and try and find, even, you know, people staying with couples in houses around Cheltenham, something that might have been, you know, 30, 40, 50 quid a night years ago, it's now into three figures a night. So if you're staying for a whole week, that is extremely expensive. That's before you have a bite to eat. If you have a drink at the races, we've speaking about the price of food and drink, then you're on to the racing. It's uncompetitive for too many races, and there's too many short prices. There's too many races. You can just go on and on and on. And this is from me. Now, I personally am Cheltenham fan number one. My life, I do a show called Up in the Ante. My whole life basically centres around Cheltenham. And I love it to bits. I absolutely adore Cheltenham. And it does so much right. And I hate the bashing. I even did a column a few weeks before Cheltenham saying, OK, I understand the bashing, but this is why I fell in love with it in the first place. And on the Thursday and Friday, it's funny, if somebody asked me to go to Cheltenham for 2 days, up until this year, I would have said the only 2 days you should ever go to Cheltenham are Tuesday and Wednesday. Magic, first day of the festival, Wednesday, great racing, the Gallagher, which was the Ballymore, the Brown Advisory, the Champion Chase, you know, Coral Cup is a cracking handicap, the Grand Annual, brilliant, Wednesday's brilliant. This year, if I came back and people said to me, well, what day, 2 days would you go to Cheltenham? I'd say Thursday and Friday, because there was less sharp prices, it was more competitive racing. If there was a better atmosphere, the whole place was buzzing on the Thursday and Friday, and it was dead on the Tuesday and Wednesday. So it seems to have turned full circle. And the reason for that is we didn't have as many show prices on the Thursday and Friday as we did on the Tuesday and Wednesday. And Willie didn't dominate the festival with show prices on Thursday and Friday like he did on Tuesday and Wednesday. So I'm going to be fascinated to see what happens in the next couple of weeks and months with the Cheltenham Festival, because the one thing I think they definitely will do, I think we'll definitely go back to a handicap cross country, because this idea of having a testimonial for former Gold Cup winners, that's nonsense. You know, that day is gone. You know, your Manila Indo's fantastic horse, he's had his day in the sun, he's won a Gold Cup. We don't want the cross country to fall into that bracket of horses who used to be grade one horses, who are kind of grade two horses now running in cross country chases. I want that to be a chance for a smaller man who, you know, doesn't get many chances at the festival to maybe win a Cheltenham Festival race with a horse that's rated in the 120s and add a little bit of magic to the story. I think that'll happen. I think the Mayor's Hurdle, I think they could potentially do something with it, because this is the first year we came away properly and said, okay, Lossiemouth actually could have won the Champion Hurdle. So whether they downgrade that maybe from a grade one to a grade two, I think that's something that could be happening. And I just wonder, will they do something with the Turners, maybe turn that into a handicap? If they turn the Turners into a handicap, even though for me it was the race at the festival this year, I wonder, will they get rid of it, turn it into a novice handicap like the Close Brothers Novice Handicap Chase used to be years ago, and maybe try and push the better horses like Grey Dawning into the Brown Advisory and the Arkle? I think they are the tweaks that we might see made for next year.
Okay, Kales, just quickly go for it. Turn us to a handicap or bring back the Close Brothers? Yes or no?
Well, I'm a massive handicap man anyway. So, and I lament the loss of the Close Brothers anyway. It was one of my favourite races for punting in, definitely. Mayor's race is interesting to say, make it a grade two. I say don't get rid of them, but move them all together. Mm-hmm. Right. Don't need to have them at the Cheltenham Festival. There's a two-day meeting in April, one day of which is predominantly for mares. Run both the Mayor's Chase and the Mayor's Hurdle there. It's 4 weeks away from Cheltenham, so it gives them a chance to run against the best horses and go for the Mayor's race. Do you really need the prestige? Does it really need to be run in one of 4 days in March if it carries the same prize money, same grade? No, it doesn't. Like, you know, so put them there. Yes, cross country, definitely.
It's a no-brainer, isn't it?
Definitely no-brainer handicap. I mean, the whole thing that Cheltenham have done over the last few years is engineer uncompetitive racing deliberately, ridiculously so. And to do that, and you know, it's an interesting distraction that's become an uninteresting distraction. Just, you know, ex high class chasers trained by Gordon Elliott, basically. The first two in a bet and been the first two home for the last 5 years. Mm. And I said when we were doing the show, like, you know, the race has been abandoned. If it had gone ahead, I wouldn't have noticed anyway. Like, you know what I mean? And it's one of those. Now, the hurdle race has always used to work, right? So we've got a 2 mile, 2 mile five, and a three. The three has been a great addition. It's always massively competitive. I don't think it's taken anything out of the other two. It's just the fact that we've got the Willie Mullins domination. Yep. Now, the domination is a case of, well, that's just how it is. There's nothing you can do about that.
Yeah.
He's the Man City of horse racing, isn't he? Best trainer, best talent, biggest resources to replace that talent. But it wasn't always that way. He got to that position because he's that good. And if owners, prospective owners, are looking at you and think, well, there's one trainer here who's going to win between a quarter and a third of all the races at Cheltenham Festival every year, then you're gonna want to put your horses with him. And it's as simple as that. So until we get bigger owners coming back over here, which you've got to persuade them to do, spending money, sourcing horses better, then Willie Mullins is always going to be at the top of the game, and it'll still be like that for a while since. And I don't think you can begrudge the man himself for being as good as he is. I just don't.
No.
You know what I mean? I can't see that. It is a disappointment for punters to see odds.
Do you think
it
makes a difference to the experience?
Of course, it does.
Has it been a factor?
Of course, it does. Yeah. I mean, this is the thing, right? It's over £100 to get in now, right? I was actually surprised that as many people turned up on the Wednesday as they did, because it was a god-awful card. Three odds on favourites on the race, a boring cross-country chase and a bumper. I mean, you couldn't put a worse car together if you tried. Like, you know, of all the races you could put together, why make that day like that? Like, you know what I mean? And yeah, it was an awful day. I took pictures from the balcony, and I'm not joking you. One of the pictures was during the Brown Advisory, and there was plenty of room out front. You could stand whenever you want. One was after the fifth race, and the out the front was completely empty. Mm. Absolutely desolate. It looked like the race course had closed, and there was still a race to go. So that's how empty it felt at times, because, you know, Cheltenham's massive compared to most race courses.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? So you should have been able to see it. And the other thing I say, the novice chase, right, instead of being lily-livered and making these knee-jerk reactions when something happens, right, keep the races as they were or bin them, because we've now got two staying novice chases that are exactly the same apart from distance.
Yes.
Right? Take that National Hunt Chase, right? Either bin it now because you've ruined it, or put it back to what it used to be.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you get a competitive race for slow old boats rather than prospective Gold Cup horses, just so owners can avoid one with the other.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, that's the problem. If you're going to keep ruining it, people aren't going to come back now. And of course, we do get the expenses from off the course as well, but that is not really a Cheltenham issue. That is just an issue with any sporting event in the world.
Yep.
Everybody, every local business rips off punters when they know they're coming to town because it's a captive audience. We have, we had a situation at the Dublin Racing Festival, which you can get into Dublin Racing Festival for like 30 quid a day, 30 euros a day, great. All right? But they will hold on. All the hotels will hold on to that weekend before releasing their prices because of the Six Nations. And if Ireland are playing at home, you pay more.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean?
Of course.
That's what happens. So that's out of Cheltenham's control. But what is in Cheltenham's control is what they put on, how much they charge, and the experience. And the experience for a lot of people on several days was terrible, particularly Tuesday, with the car parks that were just a bog.
Yeah. Just as you touched on accommodation, I live in Cheltenham. It is a huge issue for punters. Just to give you a bit of perspective about the prices, Cheltenham Gold Cup Day next year, the cheapest hotel price I found was £392. If you wanted, this is a local accommodation near the sporting event. So the FA,
this is next year.
That works for 2025 Cheltenham Gold Cup, but this is £392 for the Cheltenham Gold Cup. That's the cheapest I can find. You've got to remember, a lot of them won't put their prices out yet. We're filming this on Monday morning. That's as of Monday morning. A few more will emerge with the weeks to come. £48 you could find somewhere nearby for the FA Cup. £115 for the Europa League in Dublin, which you touched on, which is this year. Royal Ascot's very difficult to find, but you can find places within Windsor for less than £100. That's for the Friday towards the Saturday. Loads of affordable accommodation near Wimbledon for the men's final. The only one I could find, which was, I suppose, as tricky to find, was Royal Troon near for the men's Golf Open. So it is a huge problem. In terms of the
Killashea Hotel near Punchestown, last time I went was €330 a night.
Okay. It does happen. There are.
So, you know, it's not. It does happen everywhere.
Yeah, and on the experience you mentioned, ticket prices, it's overwhelmingly what people tell me. I speak to a lot of people about Cheltenham experience. We discussed it on the show last time. Loads of comments overwhelmingly you at home felt that the cost was the key issue. And as always, we'll definitely want to hear your views as to why Cheltenham isn't as busy as it once was. I think the key here to all of this is value, in that the prices of Cheltenham have gone up, the prices of train travel, accommodation, all the things have gone up. But the issue that Cheltenham have is, I think, the product that they're putting on is getting progressively worse. Whether that's down to competition, whether that's down to dominance, whether that's down to...
Yeah, they're charging more and giving less.
And giving less, pretty much, yeah. The only thing I would say that I thought was interesting is that I noticed Craig David, the world-renowned DJ musician, he did a set on Friday on Gold Cup Day. If you are paying 100 plus quid and you're getting a music set from someone like that, that makes it more valuable. I'm not quite sure how much Cheltenham had control of that. I think it was to do with the sponsors.
Did you enjoy your kills?
I stay away from the Friday. Get out of there as soon as I can.
Okay.
It would have been different if you'd have known Craig David was playing. I'd say
it would have been different if I'd known who Craig David was.
Okay. Well, we can only apologise to Craig David and his team, but no, nevertheless, Paul Keelan may have to try some Craig David on the way home.
Too old for that nonsense.
DJ, touched on the domination of Willie Mullins. 100 winners he's had now, well over 100 winners. An incredible achievement for what he's done. let's just start on him first and foremost. He's built it up from the ground. Paul's calling him the Man City of the sport. You can name any sort of accolade for him. What he's done is so, so impressive. I think it's very easy to say he's so dominant, but if you sit back and think about how he's built that business, and also I suppose the key bit is he lost Gigginstown at one point and he's come back better than ever, stronger than ever. It is quite the achievement, but also from a sport perspective, there's always a bit of a worry.
Yeah, absolutely. I always think it's interesting when Patrick Mullins is interviewed and asked about his dad, like, how did he become this behemoth? Like, how did it happen? And like you said, he always points to the loss of Gigginstown. And when they left, I think it was a third of the horses at the time or something like that. Certainly a third of his better horses. And like for anybody else, that would have been an absolute proper punch in the stomach. And Willie Mullins said, no, we're building more stables. Get more owners. I'm going to show these basically what I can do without them. And it's that type of attitude. Like, I did a piece for Wednesday's Racing Post, basically kind of following Willie a little bit on Tuesday. It was just a Mullins watch type of thing because he obviously had so many favourites on the card and so many fancy runners. And I went down to the parade ring about, you know, 15, 20 minutes before the first race. And I thought it was interesting. I think he had six runners in the race, six different sets of owners. And just to see him, like, bouncing around off them, like, it was like, as I said, it was like, what I kind of compared it to was, like, being a groom at a wedding where the meal is going to start in a couple of minutes. You have to try and talk to everybody, but you can't stay with everybody for very long. So you have to make the most of that couple of minutes. And Willie was just had them all in stitches, whatever he was saying, I don't know. He was just real personable with them. And it was only a couple of seconds with each one, but they all seemed to, like, you know, have a laugh and a joke. It was all very lighthearted, and you certainly wouldn't think it was a few minutes before the Supreme. And I think his personality and his ability to help owners enjoy the occasion on the day, I think, is a big part of it. As regards his expertise as a trainer, like, what he's able to do now is astonishing with the amount of horses that he has and the amount of horses he has in a similar bracket, like able to split up horses into different categories. And I know there was the whole rigmarole around Ballyburn, and I don't like that personally. I don't like the fact that we had to wait until a couple of days beforehand to know where the best young horse at the Cheltenham Festival was running. And I know myself and Johnny Dineen have been banging this drum for a while. I would love to see a rule implemented where you have to nominate a race for a horse a week, well, 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks
we'll
in
pause,
advance.
We'll pause there because I got a nod here of disapproval from people.
I cannot have that in a million years. I mean, it's just in no way workable. There's not a trainer in Britain or Ireland that would accept being told to make a decision before they know conditions, etc. It's just no way in the world would that ever be acceptable.
Back to you, DJ.
Well, I would say, and this is the case we've been making, it's sport, and you just can't have your ideal perfect conditions in sport all the time. Like, you know, look at, you know, different golfers and stuff. Some play well in the wind, some don't play well in the wind. Some play well in rain, some don't play well in rain. Just because conditions are not ideal for a specific horse on a day doesn't necessarily mean, you know, you can't. It doesn't necessarily mean that that horse absolutely has no chance or whatsoever. You've seen it with just say, Banbridge in the Ryanair. He ran in the Ryanair, he didn't handle the ground. Like, it's not the end of the world. Like, it's not a life or death situation. I just think it's a bit like waiting until the last possible moment to make your decision on where a horse can and cannot run. To me, it just doesn't sit easy that you can say, just say Slade Steele. Slade Steele was going for the Gallagher all season. And rightly, Henry de Bromwich said, we don't want to run against Ballyburn, so wherever Ballyburn goes, we're going somewhere else. Like, if the trainers actually had to nominate a specific race for a horse in advance of the festival, I think it would actually add to the preview experience and add to the occasion that you have this specific day that everybody is leading towards where a trainer nominates a horse for a race. I don't know. I can see Keels' point as well. Like,
I'm not saying I like the fact that we have to wait. Mm. I'm saying I can understand why trainers wait and trying to get them on board.
Yeah.
To say, yeah, we'll do that. Mm. I mean, no chance. You might as well just say, well, actually, at the entry stage, you're only allowed to enter what any horse for one race only. A bit like now you're only allowed to run them in one race only.
Yeah.
They're no longer allowed to be declared for more than one. You might as well say, well, at the entry stage, you get one shot and that's your shot.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, that would be deeply unpopular too.
Mm. But it would of course
the,
it would.
It would be the same thing as telling them 3 weeks in advance, because you're still not going to know the conditions or the likely rivals until nearly
the day. Yeah.
And just the flip side of that is, I can understand why owners who pay the money for these horses and are paying extortionate amounts and training fees. And the flip side of it is, how dare we tell the people who are paying the money what the trainer should be doing with the horse so many weeks in advance? And I get that. I 100% do get that. And I understand there would be a massive backlash. But I just wonder, maybe because the Thursday and Friday were so good this year, it won't happen. But I have to say, midway through that card on Wednesday, I said, God, drastic surgery was going to be needed with the Cheltenham Festival. And maybe this nominating a race in advance of the festival could just be something to give it that spark, give it that lift. But as you say, I can fully understand why trainers and owners will be against it.
Yeah, I think there's an interesting point in that the trainers have a lot of power over a situation. There's quite a lot of races, as we've discussed, whereby trainers can choose an easier option, and there's races at the Cheltenham Festival which seem a far easier to win than others. But also they've got the decision of making as late as possible where they can judge up the rivals. So as from a punter perspective, it is challenging because they have that power over where the horses can go and what might happen and what might dictate. And it has such a knock-on effect. Doing the preview circuit this year, I've realised how much of an effect it has. So Ballyburn going for the Supreme or to the Gallaghers. Well, that means a horse like Gidley Park, where's he going to go? Is he going to go to... So the knock-on effects, it's not just a case of Willie Mullins, which race is he going to go to? It's because he's running there, we'd rather avoid him because we feel he's good. I do, though, think, DJ, whether you agree on this, is that perhaps this was exaggerated just a little bit this year because Ballyburn did look so invincible.
Yeah, probably. But, you know, there's going to be a Ballyburn next
year. Of course,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think Ballyburn is, and I think Keel's made a good point earlier on the show, maybe he was just so far superior to the novice division this season. Like, we're talking about Ballyburn as though he's Constitution Hill already. I'm not quite sure he's Constitution Hill already. He's going to make a smash and stay in Chaser in years to come. But yeah, I just wonder, my final point on this would be, maybe you could go, you know, and this is just thinking out loud here, maybe you could go 3 weeks before the festival. You have to narrow it down to two targets, okay? Two races specifically that you might run in, and then maybe 10 days to 2 weeks before the festival, nominate the race. If you have Ballyburn, Willie Mullins comes out and says, okay, he's going to be running in the Gallagher Novices Hurdle, and everybody else then, you know, nominates obviously their horses, but you nominate them at the same time, and then all of a sudden you've got this 10-day or two-week build-up to the festival, where you basically know where everything is running, where all the punters can decide, okay, I'm going to go to Cheltenham on Wednesday because Ballyburn is running against Slade Steel, or I'm going to go because Corbett's Cross, hopefully there'll be no National Hunt Chase, and he could be running against Factor File or Grey Dawning or whatever. And I just think if it did happen, it would give, you know, people time to decide what day they want to go racing. It could get the excitement levels up a little bit earlier, and instead of having a little bit of deflation going into the festival going, oh God, where is Willie going to run this? And it's nothing to do with anti-post betting or anything like that. It's nothing to do with Cheltenham preview nights. I just wonder, is it something that could just jazz up that lead into the Cheltenham Festival where we can get excited properly a fortnight beforehand?
Yeah. Just in a minute, Paul, Langer Down, a bit of a talking point after that. How did you assess that?
Well, you see a lot of talk about Twitter. You'd think he was the only person who had a well-handicapped horse sneak his way into a race on a good mark. I mean, it's absolute nonsense, isn't it? Mm. Like, you know, that's the thing. Like, you know, it turns out that, you know, of all the trainers around at the moment, Dan Skelton in Britain is easily the best at targeting a horse for a handicap. But let's not pretend there weren't others. Yes, he won the race before, he'd got himself back down to another mark, but there are different ways of getting horses handicapped. And as we've got a handicap system, it's the trainers that play it best that come out with the winners. Now, if you're going to moan about Langer Dan, then why don't you moan about Lark in the Morning? Why don't you moan about Absurd?
Yeah.
Why don't you moan about I Know Your Way You're Thinking? Let's take Lark in the Morning first. All right. Here's a horse who's run a 95 RPE on the flat, gets beaten three maiden hurdles, gets a mark of 122. Doesn't even look generous on what he's done over hurdles. Is the talk of all the preview nights in Ireland. Absolutely bolts up, even though he's not supposed to like heavy ground. Mm. Then you've got, I know the way you're thinking. Now, here's a horse who's got a really, really stout pedigree. He's run over 2 mile to 2 mile five in four chases. Steps up best part of five furlongs and trip. Goes off at 13 to 8 in a 20-odd runner handicap chase ridden by amateur riders and wins like he's just joined in. You've got Absurd, who won an Ebor off a mark of 104, rated 110 on the flat, should be mid-155s over hurdles if he translates his ability. Looks like he doesn't get home over 2 mile at Leopardstown on soft ground. Comes to Cheltenham off a mark of 138, runs on much deeper ground, over a furlong further, and comes from last to first and wins as he likes. Now, you're not telling me those are any different to Langadon. No. It's just different ways of getting horses ready for handicaps. Right? If we have a handicap system whereby if you've got a young horse and you reveal to the handicapper exactly what it's worth, then you're an idiot. Like, you know what I mean? It's the system, you know, Mark Johnson said it years ago, it's the system that's wrong. If you're going to moan about people who get horses handicaps, it's the system that's wrong. Like, you know, no, I love handicaps. I love betting in handicaps. I like trying to spot them. I don't, you know, I wrote a piece years and years ago criticising Barney Curley for the way he had three or four horses at the same time, you know, all 66 to 1, 66 to 1. And then next thing you know, they're even money for the race, all running at the same time, and they win, and they say what a genius he is. And I said, well, if it happened like that, nobody would bet. But the truth is, everybody would bet because that's what happens.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and it happens a lot. And let's not forget, Galloping Deschamps, between his Martin Pike win and his first Gold Cup win, his only defeat was when he fell when 20 lengths clear in the Turners. The run before the Martin Pike, 100 to 1 at Leopardstown. Like, yeah, you know, you're not telling me he showed the best of his ability at Leopardstown. So,
well said, that man. Keels has just made all my points beautifully. And can I just add to this a little bit? Like, the Pretemps final, okay? My bugbear in life, the Pretemps final, okay? So Mont Morale wins it, okay? In the last 20 years of the Pretemps final, there has only been two horses who have won a race of any sort, not even a qualifier, who have won a race of any sort that season. So Oulart in 2005 won in December, okay, won a hurdle race in December, and Maldini in 2016 won a hurdle race in December as well. So 18 of the previous 20 winners of the Pretemps final had never won a race of any sort in the season that they won the Pretemps final. And this is supposed to be the Olympics of racing, the best against the best. And you have those stats put in front of you for the Pretemps final?
Well, I'll tell you what, DJ, Cheltenham are still looking for a new manager. I think you've made your case well. I think the odds have crumbled for you to get that job. We'll be back just after a second to get the boys' anti-post fancy for the 2025 Cheltenham Festival. Okay, right, ready for the 2025 Cheltenham Festival. Before we do, Paul, what was your highlight of a week and who should we be looking for next year?
Highlight of a week? Well, there, we're talking about horses coming in under the radar. How about a 10-year-old handicapper who went into the meeting on the back of a career best and then won again? Shake 'em up, Harry, won the plate. Seven-length winner in January, comes out, wins it again. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, it was proper good. Next year, what's your...
Next year, well, you always ask to look at, and I absolutely hate looking this far in advance, so you always ask to. I thought Romeo Culio travelled really, really well for a horse they didn't think was man enough to cope with that ground, which is why it was a massive drifter on the day in the bumper. I don't normally watch the bumper, obviously, but I went back and looked at it, and I thought, you know, he's you know, he's got a combination of speed and stamina. It's one of those that, you know, this time next year, people are saying, is he going to go for the Supreme or is he going to go for the Gallagher? My idea was the Supreme. But the other thing you find is that bookmakers, they look at Cheltenham and they think, that's it, we only look at Cheltenham. So they only look at the Cheltenham runners and price all those up. I thought one of the most interesting horses for the novice chases next year is a horse trained by Paul Nicholls called Caliph de Burleigh, who won at Kempton. And everyone was asking him afterwards, all the press, all they wanted to know about was Caldwell Potter. Right? And he said, well, can we talk about this horse? It's the most exciting horse I've had for ages.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. And he's going chasing. Now, Nicholls has won the Turners last year, had a fantastic second with Ginny's Destiny this year. I mean, this horse is going to be some chaser. He's certainly not a 2-mile hurdler. So he would interest me. You can't get a price on him because bookmakers have only looked at what happens at Cheltenham.
Okay, well, bookmakers, take note of Mr. Keeley there. DJ, your highlight and your tip for 25.
How good is Keels in this show, by the way? I have to say, he's predominantly a tipster, but like, he's what a hero. I would my highlight, first of all, and this is going to sound mad, Ireland had whatever 19 winners, but for me, the place came alive in the Turners from the top of the hill the whole way home. Ginny's Destiny, Grey Dawning, hard at it. I think everybody was just so deflated after Wednesday that just changed the festival. I said it earlier on the show. For me, that was the race of the festival. Obviously, the Gold Cup was amazing as well. As regards the 2025 festival, I would be very, very keen on Firefox for the Arkell. I know Ballyburn could run there. Potentially, I think, I find it hard to believe that he'll run over 2 miles in an Arkell. I think if he does go over fences, I think the Turners will be the race for him. I know we've got Sergino, who looks like he's going to make a smashing chaser. But I go back and I just watch that Firefox race again. And how he managed to finish third, given the traffic problems he met up the home straight, it's the one ride Jack Kennedy would absolutely love to have back again. And when I look back on Firefox again, he never ran after the first week of January. He obviously wasn't right when he ran in the Lawlers and Ace. And I just wonder, that match practice going into the Supreme, where, you know, it's the first race of the festival, you need to be on your game. I think it was a bit of a shock to the system. He travelled so well to the second last, and then it was like, okay, the race needs to be won now. And then he just got tapped for toe a little bit. And then when he wanted to go, he got stopped in traffic. I thought it was a hell of a run. And I know Rodders is of a different opinion here. Rodders went on, you know, the morning show on Saturday and said, you know, Willie Mullins doesn't miss and Gordon Elliott does. I thought that was a little bit harsh. He was talking about brighter days ahead. It was obviously a little bit disappointing in the mare's novice hurdle, which turned into a sprint. She's a stayer. Like, he did have 3 winners, 5 seconds and 5 thirds, trained the second in the Gold Cup, the second in the Champion Hurdle. I'm not pitching for Gordon Elliott here, but I thought his horses did run really well throughout the course of the week. And Firefox was the big eye catcher for me. He's a gorgeous looking horse. He's going to make a gorgeous chaser. I think he's about 14 or 16 to 1 for the Arkell next season. Perfect. That'll do me. Firefox.
Sounds good. My highlight would probably be my West Country bias, Golden Ace in the Mayor's Novice Hurdle. Jeremy Scott, who knew he had quite a fan club after the race. And next year, I've struggled with this. Jalon Dedairy, possibly as an Albert Bartlett type. He looked like he needed further for me. But the one takeaway I had from a betting perspective was Giovinco for the Coral Gold Cup at Newbury later in the year. Perfect. So that summarises everything you need to know about the Cheltenham Festival and Paul Keeley's music interests as well. Join us next week
for lack of.
I think for front page would have to be, well, the Willie Mullins dominance. He has been the talk of the Cheltenham Festival. Lots of disappointment about the attendances and the crowds, but with 9 winners and a second Gold Cup for Willie Mullins, I think he's deserved his place on the front page. Join us next week. Thank you very much to Paul Keeley and over in Ireland, David Jennings. Join us next week again for more of a hot discussion on racing's big talking points.